It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. On this weekend show, we're pleased to be joined on the telephone by Congressman Tom McClintock, a Republican who represents District 4 in the Congress. Congressman McClintock, thank you so much for joining us again on Motherlode Views.
Well, once again, thanks again for having me.
You know, first off, being in a congressional recess, what are the things that have been keeping you busy these past weeks?
Making the rounds of a big district that stretches from Truckee in Nevada County all the way down to Kings Canyon and Sequoia and in Fresno County. So it's a big district. Right now I'm at roughing it at Lake Tahoe. The Western Caucus of the U.S. Congress is here, about six members of the House of Representatives, all focused on the actual caucus is about 70 members, about five members here, staffs of the others. Focused on federal land use issues, the public's right to access to the public's lands, and that's really important because people forget the federal government owns nearly half of California. About 48% is federal land, and those issues are absolutely crucial. You know, particularly the folks in our region where the federal government owns as much as 93% of the land in Alpine County.
So as you're back home in the district, any other issues that you're hearing from constituents right now?
Oh, well, you know, lots of issues. You know, obviously a tremendous concern over the increasing frequency of these monstrous massacres that are taking place. Obviously concern for the economy. I mean, it's doing very well, but there are warning signs out there, so hear quite a bit about that. Forest management issues, and particularly the impact they're now having on insurance premiums and the ability of people to get fire insurance in our mountain communities.
You mentioned the massacres first that have happened. You know, what's your thoughts on that, and is there anything that the government should do in response?
Well, we have to remember, we didn't have this magnitude or this frequency of such atrocities 50 years ago. Something was protecting us 50 years ago that's not protecting us today. So I think we need to ask ourselves, what policies have changed in those 50 years? And there are three in particular. Number one, 50 years ago, when we caught a murderer, we executed them. When we caught someone who had committed a violent crime, who had demonstrated violent tendencies against others, we locked them up until they were old and gray and too feeble to cause anybody harm. And when we found someone who was dangerously mentally ill, who was a threat to themselves or to others, we committed them to a state mental hospital so that we could care for them and treat them and keep them from harming others. And unfortunately, what we've seen in those past 50 years is increasingly left-wing policies that have de facto abolished the death penalty. We're now releasing dangerous criminals back onto our streets. In fact, the state of California is protecting criminal illegal aliens after they've committed crimes, been convicted of those crimes, and are about to be released from jail. Federal law requires them to be deported the hell out of this country. California sanctuary law protects them and instead releases these already people who have already demonstrated themselves to be dangerous threats to our communities, literally releasing them back into our communities. And then most importantly for a lot of these massacres is the mental illness issue. 50 years ago, California maintained mental hospitals across the state so that we could confine the dangerously mentally ill, and as I said, to care for them and treat them. We had 37,000 mentally ill people confined to state mental institutions back in the 1950s with a population less than half the size of California. Well, left-wing policies over the years have closed those facilities, and the result is the people who used to be housed in mental hospitals because they were dangerous to themselves and to others are now out on our streets. A lot of them are in the homeless population. And we cannot judicially commit them until after they have committed a heinous crime. It seems to me that when somebody goes out of their way to tell us that they want to kill a whole bunch of people, maybe we ought to take them at their word for it and do something before they actually commit that crime.
What's your opinion on the calls for more gun control laws?
Well, let's ask ourselves, have we seen a reduction in gun control laws over the last 50 years? No, on the contrary, we've seen a massive increase in gun control laws over the last 50 years. 50 years ago, there were virtually no restrictions on a law-abiding person's ability to obtain firearms. We have imposed enormous restrictions on that right over those 50 years. Now, if gun control worked, doesn't it stand to reason that the problem would be getting better and not worse? You know, look at Mexico. They have the most restrictive gun control laws in the Western Hemisphere, and they have four times the murder rate as we have in the United States. The 50 years of experience that we have now acquired with gun control laws has demonstrated two things very, very clearly. Number one, those gun control laws are very effective at disarming law-abiding citizens. They are extremely ineffective at disarming criminals and terrorists and madmen. And what we end up creating is a society in which law-abiding people are defenseless and the criminal is as well-armed as ever.
You know, changing the subject to forest health and natural resource issues, I know that's something you keep a close tab on always in Washington, D.C. What's kind of the latest developments and discussion in that realm?
Well, that's what we're discussing up here at the conference in Tahoe this week. We did a number of field tours yesterday and the day before with the U.S. Forest Service. The good news is public opinion, I think, is starting to change on these issues. People are finally starting to realize that our forests are dangerously, in fact, morbidly overgrown. That is the source of these problems. You know, we all know from our own experience, an untended garden will grow and grow and grow until it chokes itself to death. And the same thing is true of an untended forest. Forests will grow until they choke themselves to death. They will then become consumed by disease, pestilence, and ultimately catastrophic wildfire. Before we created the Forest Service, we need to remember that we lost between 4.5 and 11 million acres every year in California to catastrophic fire. That's the way nature manages our forests. We decided around the turn of the century, after the big burn that took out some 3 million acres in Montana and Idaho, killed 87 people, destroyed 7 entire towns. We decided, you know, we want to break this natural cycle of morbid overgrowth and catastrophic wildfire. That's why we formed the U.S. Forest Service. In fact, it was just in its infancy when the big burn occurred in 1910. And we did. The loss of acres to wildfire dropped from about 11 million, well, again, between 4.5 and 11 million acres down to a very steady 250,000 acres throughout the last half of the 20th century. That's the job that the Forest Service did, actively managing our lands, actively managing the number of trees per acre with the ability of that acreage to support those trees. We had healthy and resilient forests, and we also had a thriving economy. It didn't cost us anything to manage our forests. We made money managing our forests, because every year U.S. Forest Service foresters would go out, mark off surplus timber. We would then put that timber out to bid, sell it to companies that came in to harvest that excess timber. 25% of and it produced about $1 billion a year in revenues for the federal government. 25% of that went directly to the local governments affected. The other 75% funded the entire U.S. Forest Service and our forest management programs. It worked, and it worked well. Well, we started passing laws in the mid-1970s that made that process endlessly time-consuming and ultimately cost-prohibitive. Surplus timber harvested off of the federal lands has dropped 80% in those years, while we've seen a concomitant increase in fire. The good news that I can offer you is this. In the WIN Act in 2016, I was able to get the provisions of my Tahoe Restoration Act into law. What it does is to provide for a categorical exclusion, basically streamlines cuts through all the red tape in the environmental review process. Right now, you want to cut down a tree in the forest, it requires an environmental impact statement that takes, on average, 4.5 years and runs more than 800 pages when it's completed. Our legislation has been now implemented by the Forest Service. It's taken the review process from 4.5 years down to less than 4 months, from more than 800 pages of material down to 16 pages, and they're actually able now to start thinning out the forest before they burn. Unfortunately, because of opposition, left-wing opposition in the Senate, we had to restrict that to the Tahoe Basin. But it's been working. It's been working extremely well. And I think we now have a very strong case to take back to the House and to the Senate and to say we need to do this throughout the rest of the forest system. And if we're able to do that, we'll have solved a great deal of the problem.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment is coming up in just a minute.